another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host, researcher, minister, and friend, Charles Paisley, the founder of ChristianGospelChurch.org, and the author of Come Out of Her, My People. Charles, it's good to be back and to talk all things The Message and today Lee Vail. Been wanting to get into this quite a bit. We've had a lot of people who are just slightly curious, and I have at least one person who has escaped the Lee Vail sect of The Message who's feeding me all kinds of stuff. I don't think people realize the significant critical role that he played in bringing The Message into what it is today. And, you know, even though when you look at his ministry and you look at, you know, even his sect, it's just, I think it's like a little converted house out in the middle of nowhere, but it seems so small, but yet he had such a big impact because of who he was to William Branham.
Yeah, John, I'm looking forward to talking about Lee Vail today. Lee Vail is actually very, very important, and you're correct, he is one of the smaller sects of The Message, but it is nonetheless a very important sect of The Message. I would definitely put it in there with the major sects overall. If our listeners remember, we're working our way through the sects of The Message, kind of in the chronological order that they broke away, and I might point you back to the diagram again that I've shared a few times. And if you look, the Lee Vail sect was the third major sect to break away from The Message. The Faith Assembly Fellowship broke away in 1968, the Thunders, Joseph Coleman, broke away in 1974, and Lee Vail and his sect of The Message is often referred to as the Perugia people. They broke away in 1977. That's when that began. And so we're going to walk through that today. We'll explain what the whole Perugia deal was and the other people who were some of the other prominent people that were in his sect of The Message. But yeah, Lee Vail's a very interesting guy. Lee Vail is, in fact, a Canadian, John. I don't know. Maybe not everyone realizes that. But Lee Vail was a Canadian. He was actually in Western Canada. He's kind of an itinerant traveling evangelist, you know, on a small scale back in the late 1940s. He first encountered William Branham in 1947. He was actually at some of William Branham's revivals in Western Canada. He didn't actually get an introduction to William Branham then, but that was his first time seeing him in a revival. You know, Message legends actually put Lee Vail at the Sharon Orphanage, John, at the very early days of the Latter Rain movement.
Wow.
He was supposedly connected to Latter Rain from the very earliest days. Now, just how true that is, I'm not actually sure. Like, I'm not really sure if there's any truth to the legend, but it is nonetheless, a notable legend. I've not been able to verify if it's true, but, you know, that was going on. In 1953, Lee Vail got invited to serve as a pastor of a church in West Palm Beach, Florida. So he came from Canada, he moved to Florida, and the associate pastor he had there was a man named Ned Iverson. You'll find William Branham talk about Ned Iverson quite a bit, too. And the two of them pastored the church down there for a few years. Well, somewhere along that period of time, I believe it was, you know, 1954 or 55, Lee Vail has a prophecy. So he's, you know, into Pentecostalism. He gives his congregation there in West Palm Beach a prophecy, and he says, "Behold, a prophet from the north shall come to tell us the truth." Okay? And as I have pointed out before, West Palm Beach is very close to the most southerly point in the United States, okay?
That's what I was thinking. How big of a prophecy is this? Everything's north.
I know, exactly. So you don't get pretty well any preacher that's going to come to them is going to almost, you know, 99.9% of preachers are going to come from the north. So lo and behold, just shortly after that, William Branham comes to town and holds a revival series. And Lee Vail, through that revival series, actually meets William Branham face-to-face for the first time. And that begins their relationship. And of course, naturally, he thinks, this is the fulfillment to my prophecy. We have found our prophet.
It's so odd thinking back about how we used to view prophets in this movement. And it wasn't limited to just The Message. I have had conversations with Pentecostal people, with charismatic. I have a lot of Pentecostal and charismatic friends. They still kind of believe this. And they have really taken away and distracted from what the word prophet really means. And In fact, I just had a conversation with David Fish. That'll soon be coming out probably before this. But we were talking about how the emphasis on the gifts in the way that it is presented has distracted from the true meaning of a prophet. And yet at the same time, you have ministers like this that are just throwing out random loose things that, I mean, anything anything north of Florida can be presented who's claiming as a prophet. Anybody who's coming can be this. But the way that the message has set the standards for charismatic movement, I think, is the significant part. Because William Branham kind of established this in that he and Gordon Lindsay were creating this pyramid scheme of prophets and ministries. And so everybody coming into this can very easily become one.
It is all very odd, isn't it? You know, Lee Vail, after he met William Branham, and I believe already before he was associating with the Independent Assemblies of God, but through the Independent Assemblies of God, after he met William Branham, he ended up moving to Ohio, where he became pastor of another church in Ohio. And Lee Vail claimed his background was Baptist, but there are elements in his testimony that he was believed in speaking in tongues from 18 years old. So he was, if he was a Baptist, John, he must have been a Pentecostal Baptist because, you know, he had some really unusual Baptist practices, right? So anyways, he claimed to be a Baptist, but, you know, obviously a tongue-speaking Baptist. And he claimed to be, claimed to be pastoring a quote-unquote Baptist church in Ohio after he moved there in about 1957, 58, roughly. So once he was there, though, and he started working around William Branham quite a bit and with the Independent Assemblies of God, if you listen to his testimonies, it's about the year 1958 when Lee Vail starts to accept William Branham's Elijah claims. Okay, so while he had met William Branham a bit, 1958 is when he really started to accept what we would describe as the message, started to accept that William Branham was Elijah. And of course, by that point, there's already a fairly well-established community, especially in Jeffersonville, that already believes William Branham is Elijah. So he's joining himself to a larger cult of personality that already existed at that point in time. So when William Branham died, and as those first schisms unfolded that we've talked about, Lee Vail actually aligned with the main sect. He stayed on the side of church order, and Lee Vail himself was actually among the most conservative of all of the preachers when it came to the gifts of the Spirit. And what Lee Vail told his audiences, that he had a private conversation with William Branham in about 1959. And in about 1959, William Branham told him that the gifts of the Spirit were ceasing right then, and that there would be no more gifts of the Spirit after that. And Lee Vail actually became a cessationist after William Branham died. He no longer believed in the gifts of the Spirit. He didn't even have private gift rooms. So he went down this path where his followers are, I would say, you know, arguably the most closest thing in the message there is to cessationists, and it all ceased with William Branham. And you'll find some of the other main sect churches are not too terribly far from that, but Lee Vail is definitely a huge father and promoter of that idea that the gifts of the Spirit ceased with William Branham.
It's funny you say that, because among my Pentecostal and charismatic friends, we often the gifts come up in discussion, right? Because they really want to probe my head and see what it is I believe, and I'm very cautious not to try to sway people either way, so I usually don't give that up. But in the message, the gifts were this weird taboo thing, because William Branham, like Bosworth, tried to separate Pentecostalism. The majority of Pentecostals believed that speaking in tongues was evidence of the Holy Spirit, and they tried to draw this dividing line in the sand and say, no, it's not, it's the healing. And so there was this big rift that came. Well, then somewhere in the middle of this, William Branham claimed that he himself could speak in tongues, and I've got a video up, but he basically fakes it before the entire audience that he's speaking to. He mentions going to, I can't remember the country, Jamaica or something.
Finland, I think.
Finland, yeah. And he hears this phrase Humelin Raha. And he comes back and he's speaking in an audience and he says, and I heard the most wonderful phrase, Humelin Raha. It was great. And it means this, I can't even remember what it means, but he's
praise
telling
the Lord, I think.
Something like this, right? And he tells everybody that he heard it and that was wonderful to him. Well, then a few, maybe weeks, maybe months later, he's speaking to a crowd and he says, and Humelin Raha, wait, what did I say? God just spoke through me. And so he fakes the whole thing, right? And so you're kind of in this weird place. If you understand his ministry, he really denounces people who emphasize speaking in tongues. And then here he is faking it.
You know, when we talk through the church order episodes, there was a point in time when the Branham Tabernacle and the entirety of the message community was, you know, rampant with the gifts of the Spirit. I mean, prophecy, yeah. Speaking in tongues, they would dance, shout, roll around on the floor, you know, foam at the mouth, slain in the Spirit, the whole bit, all through the church services, right? And so, yeah, William Branham changed that. And so within the message, you have kind of a rainbow of opinions on the gifts of the Spirit, which is maybe unusual for people on the outside, especially, I think, for the NAR people who say, William Branham is this example that we all must be like. And it's kind of shocking that maybe a large section of his cult of personality doesn't believe that. And like he was this, no, to the cult of personality, a lot of them, he was this one singular coming of this figure, and he left, and they don't really, a lot of them, like I said, are more or less cessationists. They don't believe it's going to happen, and it's actually based, according to Lee Vail and William Branham himself personally saying that, and then also in his sermons really discouraging it. So Lee Vail's sect of the message is very much in that vein of thought. So I think that's something important to point out. Now, before Lee Vail fell out, he was very important to the main sect of the message and to William Branham. Lee Vail, you know, as William Branham's campaign team fell apart, we've talked about that in a revival history series. You know, as William Branham had his falling out with the Voice of Healing and he started to lose his Ern Baxters and F.F. Bosworth died and all these other things happened, William Branham starts needing to import and get new people, new talent on his team. Well, Lee Vail is one of those guys that after he loses a lot of his initial campaign team, he gets offered positions on Branham's team to replace people who are leaving. And among the many things that Lee Vail did on maybe about four of William Branham's revival tours, Lee Vail went along as kind of an opening act, a supporting evangelist who kind of did the Ern Baxter bit where he would do some Bible teaching and then introduce William Branham. So Lee Vail had a little bit of that activity. It was a minor role. Like I said, it was only about four of his revival series that he did that. But through that, He started to get a relationship with William Branham where he was more or less like a sounding board for William Branham, and William Branham would like bounce ideas off of him. This is how, you know, Lee Vail described it. And even though he only did about four revival series with him, he continued to be the sounding board for William Branham really for the rest of his life. And William Branham would bounce ideas off of him like, what do you think about, hey, the seven thunders of Revelation, Lee Vail? Here's what I think, blah, 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 blah. And Lee Vail, oh, yeah, that sounds nice, and here's what I think. So that's, you know. And they would have these exchanges, which William Branham would use to help develop some of his ideas. And so Lee Vail played, probably more so than any other preacher, he played a fairly important role as a sounding board in helping William Branham develop some of his various ideas that he came up with and preached. And William Branham even alluded to some of this on tape quite a bit, because he would say concerning Lee Vail, if you have any questions about the things that I preach, the person you need to go ask is Brother Lee Vail, Dr. Lee Vail, who's here on this tour with me. And so Lee Vail traveled along with him and was almost presented as a sort of a, I mean, he straight up presented as a theologian, a doctor of divinity, a PhD is what William Branham presented him as on the tours, and that the people, if they had any questions about what he preached or thought or believed, they could go to Lee Vail, and Lee Vail was the official explainer of the message in these things to the people on the tours. So it was a very important role that Lee Vail held in that way.
And one of the interesting things to think through as you're doing this is the cross-pollination, because when you have a main speaker who's on stage and he's the big showmanship act, right? And you have these people who come before him, often the main speaker listens to the people who are speaking before. And so as William Branham is there and he's going to be preaching and doing his faith healing gig, he's listening to Lee Vail. And what's interesting is the cross-pollination there, because the things that Lee Vail says doctrinally can sometimes flow over into what William Branham says doctrinally, and vice versa, because Lee Vail, being a cult member, he can, you know, feed off of William Branham, and William Branham can feed off of him. So if you look at it like that, Lee Vail could possibly, potentially have been a part in just evolving William Branham himself to who he was. And considering the fact that we have the, you know, the secret audio letter from William Branham to Lee Vail, where they're kind of, if you read it and understand what William Branham is saying, he's telling Lee Vail to manipulate the crowds. You plant this seed and I'm going to follow it up with my ministry and grow it into this deity thing, right? So he and Lee Vail are kind of collaborating in a indoctrination manipulation scheme, according to this recording. Well, this went far back before, prior to the recording, because they're kind of working together on stage.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think it's very fair to credit Lee Vail with influencing William Branham's views on a lot of things, honestly. I mean, people have the idea, of course, in the message that, you know, angels and the Holy Spirit and all this stuff came to William Branham and gave him all of this divine revelation. No, that never happened. William Branham tricked us on every stitch of that. The truth is, every stitch of it, he was reading out of his library books, you know, and in that process of getting all these ideas out of his library books, Lee Vail is one of the people. We know of others besides Lee Vail, but Lee Vail was one of the key figures that he was sounding this information to, getting feedback from Lee Vail, using his opinions to then tweak his views a little bit, you know, maybe to pre-address some certain criticisms in it, and then he'd preach it. He'd deliver it, right? And Lee Vail would help him set it up. You're exactly right, John. And Lee Vail played I think calling it a collaborative role in developing some of the core beliefs of the message. Lee Vail was absolutely involved in that. Right. Another person who was absolutely involved in that, John, was Bankswood's wife.
You're right. I had a person contact me who was feeding me all kinds of inside information. In fact, a large part of my website exists because of the information that this person was giving me. And this person informed me not just the way in which she was feeding William Branham information, to the extent I'm told that she was helping prepare the sermon notes. So he would go out, and some of the doctrines were, it was Jehovah's Witness doctrine she was preparing in his sermon notes, and then he wouldn't prepare his own sermons. He would go speak from what she had prepared.
That's exactly right. And let me describe just a little bit how that works. So Banks Woods and his wife were William Branham's next door neighbors. Okay? Walk out his back door, walk across the property line, he's at Banks Woods' house. Okay? Banks Wood was put in charge of the literature publishing efforts of the early message community. And so what turned into Spoken Words Publications, Banks Woods was the original leader of that. Okay? And in 1962, William Branham asked Lee Vail to become the editor of all of his sermons within that franchise to produce literature, which Banks Woods had. So Banks Woods was in charge of. So Lee Vail was at Banks Woods' house with him and his wife working on the literature publishing endeavors, John. And so when William Branham would come over and use Lee Vail as a sounding board, Banks Woods' wife was there with Lee Vail helping out in all the endeavors. So he was sounding off both of them at the same time, okay? This is how it worked. And some of it he would do by tape or by phone call, but yeah, they were... Banks Woods' wife, in a sense, acted as a secretary to Banks Woods and Lee Vail through that period, and that's how she was in the position to help him write his sermon notes and do all of those sort of things. It was as part of the franchise that turned into Spoken Word Publications, right? So you think of what Helen Borders does for Mr. Joseph today. That's what she was doing all those years ago, Banks Woods' wife. we can talk more about Miss Helen Borders at a later date. But at any rate, as we kind of move along there, that's what Lee Vail was doing. He got invited to be the publisher of literature, the editor of the literature that William Branham was writing. And let me explain, too, why that was necessary. So as William Branham kept having falling outs with Voice of Healing and the Voice of Healing people, before Lee Vail, the editor of William Branham's literature, was Anna Jean Moore, who is Jack Moore's daughter. Well, Anna Jean Moore got to the point where she said, "These sermons are incoherent. I cannot edit these anymore." It got that bad.
Yeah.
And she's like, "I can't, this doesn't make sense to me. I can't edit these anymore. You really need somebody who's closer to you and travels with you that can, you know, that can ask you, what did you mean here and what did you mean there?" Because it's nonsensical to her. And she more or less bows out from editing all of the literature. So, and Voice of Healing, you know, had the big printing presses and everything. All the literature was still published at Voice of Healing back then. But she bows out as editor, and so Lee Vail comes in and takes over as editor to backfill her, Anna Jean Moore's position in that group. So Anna Jean Moore was doing it before Lee Vail. And Lee Vail actually credits Joseph Matson-Bose for coming up with the idea and recommending him to replace Anna Jean Moore. So that kind of just kind of give you an idea what's going on behind the scenes with all these people back then.
It also gives you a special inside view of what it would have been like to be working with William Branham. And keep in mind, Voice of Healing evolved into Christ for the Nations Institute, which is significant in the Charismatic and now the NAR movements. These people knew that the sermons were incoherent. And if you read between the lines of what she's saying there, she's really saying, doctrinally, you're like a ping pong ball.
I think that's an accurate statement, John. And we can put up here on the screen an interview. Anna Jean actually did an interview with, I don't know who it was, somebody from Oral Roberts University, and the archives of her interview about her no longer being able to do the editing is actually in the archives at Oral Roberts University. So all this is recorded out there, actually, for people to just, you can read it your own, you know, you can read what Anna Jean Moore said herself and compare that to what William Branham said, and you'll find that somebody was spinning a bunch of stuff to us in the message about how all of this unfolded, right? Because it doesn't actually match what actually happened. So anyways, Lee Vail takes over as editor, and one of the very first things, John, that Lee Vail put together for William Branham was this book right here called 20th Century Prophet. This is the very first, what I would call the very first message biography of William Branham. Okay, before this, there's other biographies that have been published, but I would think of them more of his latter reign biography. They were produced by people who weren't necessarily in his cult of personality. This is the first biography of William Branham published by and through his cult of personality, and Lee Vail was the editor of this book.
And I want to point out, as you're looking at the book, if you're listening and don't have the video feed, I'm going to point it out. But on the cover is what looks like an ancient Bible scroll. And that is to signify William Branham is the prophet. The interesting thing is the contradiction in that image, because there wasn't a single prophecy that was written down on a scroll, as the Old Testament prophets did, while William Branham presented himself to be an Old Testament prophet. Every single prophecy, the only thing that you can do to identify one of his prophecies is to hear him say it after the fact, versus the ancient Hebrew prophets, whenever they prophesied, they wrote it down so that afterwards their prophecies could be evaluated to see if it was a prophecy from God or not. So the significance of that that image is just, it's astounding to me.
This biography was wrote before William Branham died, like the text of it and everything. And William Branham personally approved this biography to be printed. This was one of the very first publications of what became Spoken Word Publications, John. And so if you want to know what William Branham believed about himself at the end of his life, this book is what he believed about himself. The transcripts of all this was created before he died, okay, and Lee Vail edited it. So it's right here. I don't think, maybe not a lot of people realize this, but this was actually initially wrote before he died, and it came out just after he died to the Message community. There's some interesting stuff in here, John. One thing I will point out to you, which is on page 37, which, again, I don't think a lot of people notice. Lee Vail wrote that the only person who heard the voice at the river in 1933 that said, "As John the Baptist was sent to forerun my first coming, so you have been sent with a message to forerun my second coming." Lee Vail very clearly says on page 37 that the only person who heard that voice speak at the river that day was William Branham. Okay? So I think that this is, there's things here that were known, and I think it's just important to point that out to people. Lee Vail admits in here that there is not a single known witness when he wrote this book in the 60s that corroborates William Branham's story of what happened at the 1933 baptism. And again, I just want to really point that out here in this book.
You're right, and it is significant to understand the mentality of William Branham before he died, especially in the later years, because as we have discussed often, his mental faculties were really failing towards the end of his life, which is going to also be interesting the deeper we go with the Lee Vail doctrine, because the years in which he was mentally unstable were the years in which everybody believed that he had the divine word of God. And some people take it to the opposite extreme and say that the years from 1947 up until 63, when William Branham was in the height of his fame, they say that that was uninspired. So this whole thing, the book that you have, the view into his head, is significant.
Let me read you just the excerpt here, since we probably won't put pictures up here because Voice of God has all this copyrighted because it's their literature. The quote is on page 37, "As many ran in fear and others knelt in prayer, a voice spoke out of the pillar of fire and said to him," William Branham, "As John the Baptist was the forerunner of the first coming of Christ, so your message is the forerunner of the second coming of Christ. Of course, he alone heard the words." Okay, and it goes on to describe what other people may or may not have actually witnessed, and which we talked a little bit about in some prior episodes when we did the 1933 stuff. So, you know, other people claim that there was some sort of a loud explosion when that happened. Like a sonic boom or a dynamite blast or something of that nature, but nobody heard or saw what William Branham heard or saw, and Lee Vail's pretty open about that in that book. So Lee Vail ends up editor of the publications, and that one comes out first. The one, though, John, that really is, I would say, super, super important is, I have another one here, The Exposition of the Seven Church Ages. This is the really, really important one. When Lee Vail came on in 1961 to the team, it was actually the church ages that he was brought on most specifically to work on. And that is specifically what Anna Jean had turned down. Believe it or not, when William Branham died, there were not a lot of his sermons in print. Only, I would say, maybe 30 of his sermons were actually in print when he died. It wasn't actually all that lot. Most of the ones that had been put in print had been basically wrote up, typed up as abridged versions, and had been ran in Herald of Faith. That's where most of them were. There wasn't spoken word magazines before he died, like where they printed out full transcripts. That didn't exist before he died. That all came after. But before he died, there were abridged sermons where they basically about one third of his sermon would get summarized up and put into ran in Herald Faith magazine, or occasionally there would be one in Voice magazine, or there was also occasional times where there'd be one in Voice Healing, you know, just the abridged versions of his sermons. And that really was the only thing that was in print. And that's why Anna Jean Moore had got started, because she was basically abridging them, summarizing them so they could fit, you know, on, you know, maybe 5 to 6 pages in a magazine, instead of, you know, the whole sermon in spoken word publication. So anyways, Lee Vail is to publish the Seven Church Ages. And this is William Branham's first really big, you know, big series to be published. And in that sermon, I mean, if our listeners don't know, roughly William Branham is preaching that The history of the church since Jesus Christ is broken into seven ages, symbolized by the seven churches of Asia, and there's a messenger to every age, and he is the messenger to age number seven. And that's kind of the summary, and the end of the world's going to happen now because he's here and it's age number seven. Well, Lee Vale, it actually started, John, after Anna Jean Moore said she couldn't do it. William Branham first went to J.T. Parnell. So we've talked about J.T. Parnell a few times. J.T. Parnell was a message polygamist. He started being a polygamist in 1965 after William Branham preached marriage and divorce. And William Branham actually had one of J.T. Parnell's polygamist wives type up the original manuscript, John, for the Seven Church Ages book.
Wow. Okay?
And one of J.T. Parnell's polygamous wives who typed up that manuscript provided it to Lee Vale as the basis to start editing it. And then, having got that, Lee Vale starts working with William Branham to go through all the text of the pages and everything and turn it into the book that we have today. I want to talk some more about that, though.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started? Or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. It's really funny when you think about it, because whenever I first published the information that William Branham openly supported polygamy, I got a lot of backlash from message preachers. They're saying, no, he didn't. You know his words. Because he speaks out of both sides of his mouth. You can find some sermons where he condemns it, but you find other sermons where he praises it. And the point that all of them seem to miss is William Branham worked closely with multiple polygamists, and he simply didn't care that they were polygamists. So if he were this outspoken prophet trying to true the bride up for the last days, and polygamy in his view would have been wrong, he would have openly condemned it and not supported these guys. But he worked with polygamists.
Oh, absolutely. William Branham worked with all kinds of dirty scoundrels, and he knew they were dirty scoundrels when he worked with them. Yeah. Absolutely. And yeah, the Exposition of Seven Church Ages, you know, this beloved message book, was in part the product of message polygamists, ladies and gentlemen. That is the truth. Just as the, you know, a very large faction of the message community globally was recruited by polygamists, especially in Africa. You know, Sidney Jackson was a polygamist, the man who spearheaded message outreach efforts in Africa after William Branham died. And J.T. Parnell, we might do a full episode on him. He launched a polygamous sect of the message after William Branham died. So, at any rate, it's kind of around the writing of the Seven Church Ages where Lee Vale starts to get into trouble and have disagreements with the rest of the message community. So when Lee Vale wrote this book, John, I'm sure you have been in the message your whole life. This is actually a fairly controversial book in the message, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this book in the message is controversial not because of William Branham preached the sermons on the seven seals, but because Lee Vale edited the book. And when I say he edited the book, like, he, on one level, he did two different things. On one level, he cleaned up William Branham's grammar. There's, like, if you go back and you listen to the original sermons William Branham preached and compare it to here, Lee Vale subtracted roughly 20% of what William Branham said. And if you go through and kind of compare it out, you'll find out the 20% that Lee Vale subtracted was, you know, it was junk. It was meaningless. It was not substantive to the topic. It was William Branham going out in left field and chasing a squirrel. It was William Branham misspeaking. It was William Branham sneezing and coughing and hemming. It's that sort of stuff that Lee Vale cut out. But John, to the main sect of the message, especially the deity cult, and especially a lot of the people who were starting to treat William Branham's sermons as scripture, it was like he was deleting verses out of the Bible because he deleted William Branham's coughs. You know, it was that bad, John. And so one side of the message is outrage that Lee Vail has deleted roughly 20% of William Branham's sermons when he published the book. Is it possible, John, that Lee Vail edited out the Rapturing Faith? Oh my goodness. Like, we just can't take that risk. So that was like one side of the furor that started against Lee Vail.
There's so much I could say there, and I don't know how trim it down to, because it's a side story to this podcast, but the Pentecostal movement, by and large, was trained through British Israelism to take specific verses and emphasize the power of each individual verse. And they do that with the Bible. Well, then the message comes along, and William Branham presents the idea of the spoken word, which eventually evolved into word of faith, etc. And they had the same philosophy, but they applied it to William Branham's words. So to remove one single sentence of this is blasphemy. And the significance of this particular book is crazy, because in the, I guess it was the previous episode, we mentioned Chris Reed and Morningstar, Stature of a Perfect Man. The image of the pyramid that he's showing is the Church Ages. And Reed, who is influential in IHOP KC and, you know, Beth, all of these groups that are looking to Morningstar and connected with them through the NAR apostolic networks, he's feeding William Branham's seven Church Ages into them, right? And he very cautiously changes. I don't know if you caught it, Charles, but he changed in his version of the diagram where all of the message cults has the word Branham for the Laodicean church age. He took the word out and replaced it with another word. So he's preaching Branhamism. He takes Branham's name out of it. And yet he's preaching this, the seven church ages. It is one of the most significant and controversial doctrines in the message.
I know, John. And it's a really big deal to the main sect, the people who are adopting quote preaching, the people who are implementing tape churches. It's a really big deal that Lee Vail subtracted portions of William Branham's sermons out. They are, it's outrageous to them. Well, the other sect of the message, the sect I come from, John, they were upset for the exact opposite reason. Okay, it wasn't what Lee Vail took out, but it was what he added that outraged the sect of the message I come from. And there is actually quite a lot of stuff in here that William Branham did not actually preach when he preached the seals, or when he preached the church ages. And what Lee Vail did is he sort of integrated some of William Branham's sermon on the seven seals with his sermon on the church ages. And so you end up with a bit of a synthesis where Lee Vail is merging some sermons in here that weren't really part of when William Branham originally preached it. And so it basically comes out, this book is a good 30 to 40% different than the original sermons that William Branham preached on this topic. And to the stuff he cut out, well, the people are outraged that he cut out maybe he cut out Rapturing Faith, for goodness sakes, you know? And then to the stuff that he added, he is inserting his words in the place of the prophet. It's like he's adding to the Bible. So they get him coming and going on this, John. And Lee Vail is kind of blindsided by this. And the truth is, this was published like the year after William Branham died. But here's the thing that people didn't realize. William Branham proofread this thing. William Branham blessed the whole thing. William Branham, and Lee Vail has the tapes to prove it, don't he? Yeah. So William Branham actually indeed did go page by page through this book with Lee Vail and say, yes, keep that, no, take that out, yes, keep that. William Branham literally did that page by page for this book. And maybe we can put a little bit of the recording up here, John, of when he did that. But yeah, and Lee Vail, after all of the outrage, he had kept. William Branham told him to destroy all the evidence because Lee Vail had recorded it. But Lee Vail published all the tapes of all of his time with William Branham going through, yes, this page, that page, and basically proved that William Branham did indeed go through this book with him page by page, and it is indeed what William Branham wanted it to be. Regardless of what anyone else in the message has to say about it. This is William Branham's work.
Brother Lee. Inception forward here on page 38 and number 4. Don't you think it would be a good thing right here where this you're speaking about Abraham, the God himself being redeeming what Sarah was thinking in the tent behind him? That it would be good here to place the scripture there. I believe it's found in Hebrews, the 4th chapter, the 12th verse, for the word of God is sharper than a two-edged sword and discerns the thoughts of the heart, showing that this was the word of God manifested, and that would show there then, that he was the word manifested. He, God himself, is the word, and it's the word that discerns the thought that's in the heart, and that's how Jesus, being in the beginning, being God, and God was the Word. The Word made manifest. You see, actually, he could know the thoughts of the heart because he is the Word. Get it now? And then the portion of the Word that's right in this day, which is the prophet, also will know the thoughts of the heart because it will be the Word made manifest in a man that can know the thoughts that's in their heart. Thank you, Brother Radio. On page, what was that number now? I forgot it. 41, page 41, and this is number 5 on the side. Very beautiful, this is. Yeah, I really like this, and I like all of it, and this is really outstanding here. When Moses is speaking here about raising up, the Lord is raising up a prophet. And God spoke to him himself out of the fire up on the mountain. And he promises him here that he'll not do that no more, but he'll always speak to them through a prophet. And the Lord your God shall raise up a prophet. And you might emphasize that a little bit, see that God promises here that from henceforth when he speaks, it'll be through a prophet. Not no more will he speak out audibly with his own voice through the fire and so forth like that, but he'll be through a prophet. Thank you, Brother Daniel.
It's nonsensical, man, and the argument, the controversy itself, is proof positive that the people have replaced the Bible with the words of William Branham. That argument, that fight, you know, to keep it exactly as it is, verse by, I laugh using the word verse because it's not a verse. He was speaking, and he was speaking like a ping pong ball, but they take each single sentence that he said, and they turn it into a verse. And remember, as I just said, Chris Reed and Morningstar, not only Chris Reed, but many of these NAR guys are trying to promote Branham as the, you know, more than a prophet. They like to take this philosophy that he's part of the coming, you know, Joel's army manifestation, etc. He's the one who laid the groundwork, which by and large he did. But if you understand that his words were like a ping pong ball and other people were manipulating, combining his words, and the movement, by and large, viewed his words as a Bible, you really, really understand how, I don't know what the word, it's heretical. You really understand how heretical this is.
I know. It's if you're not inside the message, it is maybe hard to wrap your mind around just how big of a deal this was when this all happened. But this was life and death issues to the message community, you know, whether he was adding to or taking away from. This was life and death issue when this happened in the early message community. And what happens, John, is basically the uproar and the furor and the backlash when this comes out. And this is the first major publication from Spoken Word Publications right here. When the backlash of all that happens, the reaction of the group is essentially that they're going to publish all of William Branham's sermons verbatim moving forward. So it was actually the furor and backlash to this book which led to all of the spoken word transcripts to be published verbatim. This came out, I want to say, in 66, 67. I have the exact dates in my book, but that came out right really as Spoken Word was starting off. Spoken Word was named Spoken Word in 1967. If you remember back a few episodes ago, we talked about how Banks Woods resigned more or less in protest from all of his positions when Billy Paul overthrew the Branham Tabernacle. Well, he was still the head of what turned into Spoken Word Publications when he resigned. And following his resignation, they put Roy Borders in charge. So Bank Woods was in charge of Spoken Word Publications before Roy Borders. Roy Borders took over, and that's when it was named Spoken Word Publications. And this was the first, really the first literature that came out of Spoken Word Publications. This biography and this 20th Century Prophet book. These were the original publications out of there. And after Roy Borders took over, and in that transition point of time after William Branham died. And so as that happened, John, Roy Borders and Lee Vail kind of have a little bit of a falling out. Lee Vail resigns as chief editor, and Roy Borders makes the decision from here on out, everything will be published verbatim. And that is what they started to do.
It's essentially the message version of the Book of Mormon. You literally take the words of William Branham, which is the new Bible, right? And it's combined with the old Bible. It is exactly what the Mormons do. And I've heard sermon after sermon about, you know, the Mormons and how they're a cult and how they have added to or taken away from the Word of God. Well, they're doing the same thing in the message.
It's quite something else, isn't it? So after Lee Vail resigns, more or less, stops being the chief editor of all of the literature for Spoken Word Publications and the franchise doing all the message literature, he starts really to lean into his role as the authorized explainer of the message. That really is where he kind of takes his lead and his big focus after that. He feels like it's his job to go around and help people understand the complexities of the message that are hard to understand. And let me give you a quote from William Branham. William Branham endorsed Lee Vail very, very highly. This is from a sermon, Jesus Christ the Same, Yesterday, Today, and Forever, from 1958. William Branham said, "If there's anything you lack of understanding, something that you do not understand, my associate, Brother Vail here, is available at all times to explain anything that seems mysterious to you ministering brethren, or wherever you are, or any lay member, or anything."
Wow.
So William Branham made quotes like that about Lee Vail a lot. And that endorsement from the prophet of God, John, basically gave Lee Vail supreme authority to interpret the message after William Branham was gone. And Lee Vail played that up to great effect. William Branham did indeed make Lee Vail the authorized explainer of the message. And so that is what Lee Vail undertook to do for the rest of his life. And he took that very, very seriously. And another thing that is quite notable is, you know, all throughout the healing revivals, wherever they went or whenever William Branham introduced Lee Vail, to kind of back up Lee Vail and make it look like he was this great authority, he would always call him Dr. Lee Vail, right? And he would always emphasize, there's times he point blank said Lee Vail had a PhD, he'd say things like this. But come to find out, Lee Vail never went to college. Lee Vail was not a doctor. Lee Vail did not have a PhD. None of that was true. William Branham made it all up, and Lee Vail went along with him all of those years, allowing him to say he was a doctor and allowing him to say he was this great theologian. And it was all just an act all along, John. The whole thing was a hoax. It was a scam.
Yeah, and you know, I've had people tell me that's not significant. That doesn't matter. And I'm like, it doesn't matter that he was lying. And when they throw around this word vindication, he's the vindicated prophet of God, referring to William Branham. Well, when you have a person who's he himself is making the vindication by saying, here's Dr. Lee Vail and he supports me. He's a very educated man and he supports what I say. You're making your own vindication.
Well, let me turn it around the other way, John. Wouldn't it be a failed discernment? I mean, if he's discerning Dr. Vail to be a doctor, I mean, isn't that evidence that William Branham doesn't really have a gift of discernment? I mean, isn't that evidence that William Branham, so obviously William Branham's just lying and knows it's not true. But, I mean, if he's this great prophet, obviously William Branham has no gift of discernment. Obviously, William Branham is unable to know these things, right? Because he's incorrectly discerning someone to be a doctor when they're not. Okay. So yeah. I go down that road with it. I mean, it just, all of this stuff blows up William Branham. He's dishonest. He has no gift like he really pretends. It just blows him up. And he's like faking this guy as an authority. Yes, this great authority agrees with me. But he's not really an authority.
Yeah. And even what you said right there, I want to pause, because for the listeners who weren't in the message cult, that statement would be a little bit hard to understand. But in the message, which included the latter rain, by and large, the latter rain movement accepted this version of a prophet, an all-knowing, all-seeing, omniscient, omnipotent God, basically, is what a prophet
is.
Peer into your soul, can hold your hand and look in your eyes and see everything that you've done. Basically, they were creating a sorcerer. This is a sorcerer, not a prophet. Versus a biblical prophet is a person who can't control it. Whenever God speaks through him, God just happens to speak through him. It's not this flowing river that flows through his mouth with an on-off switch. It's literally God chooses whenever it's going to happen, and it happens. But they have turned it into, the prophet is the sorcerer, he can peer into your very soul.
And so, I mean, obviously we know this throws William Branham into question that he did that. But who else does it also throw into question? It throws into question Lee Vail, who went along with it for all those years, right? So Lee Vail himself, obviously, just through that interchange, proves Lee Vail will lie on William Branham's behalf. That is, you know, and I pointed that out with a lot of these, you know, with people as we went through. They lie knowingly on William Branham's behalf. Like, Lee Vail lied on William Branham's behalf a lot. And so there's a reason we can't really trust any of their testimonies, right? Because there is a proven track record of them lying to support William Branham. And this whole going along with being a doctor of divinity thing was Lee Vail lying to support William Branham. And it's very, it destroys their credibility is what really makes it so important. It proves to us we can't really trust what they say to us, especially about William Branham, because they have a track record of dishonesty on that subject.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not something that you see in normal Christian circles. I'll say it like that. If you're in the message, this kind of, you know, you're so used to people lying to you, you don't care. You kind of turn it off. But if you were to go to a reputable church with a reputable preacher who has went through his studies and he has actually got a doctor of divinity and knows the work involved and the study involved to get that, they're actually offended by this. Why is this man lying? This guy doesn't have a doctor of divinity. He doesn't have a clue about scripture because he's never been trained. And therein lies the problem. In the message, in the latter rain movement, by and large, they teach you and indoctrinate you to believe that the study of the Bible and the discourse of study for centuries, for, you know, millennia, having gone through that and understanding what it is you're preaching about is heretical. They actually teach that it's heresy to go through and get your doctor of divinity. So now think about that. You have a movement that condemns every single person with a degree in religion whatsoever, and they call the seminaries, they call them cemeteries. But yet, here's the person who's instigating all of that, giving the title to Lee Vail, who's his assistant.
Lee Vail, through these years, you know, while he was still, you know, popular before all the Perugia stuff happened, he traveled quite widely. He traveled to Europe. He worked alongside Ewald Frank, toured churches in Europe. He did the same across North America, Canada, the United States, Mexico. I believe he even made some trips into the Caribbean and Central America as well. But Lee Vail traveled a lot and went to a lot of different churches. And as he did that, he developed a group of churches that were loyal to his version of the message and were highly respecting of his role as the authorized explainer of the message. Is if you have any questions, you can ask Dr. Lee Vail, right? They really gave a lot of credence to that endorsement from William Branham. And that group of people form the sect of the message and basically separate from the main sect with Lee Vail when the Perugia stuff happens. And I just want to kind of walk through who some of those were. The most notable one is a man named Terry Sproul. And Terry Sproul had a church in Edmonton, Alberta, and his church was called Word of Life Tabernacle. Lee Vail's own church was called Grace Gospel Church. It was in St. Pyrrhus, Ohio. So Terry Sproul's church is of the Lee Vail persuasion, John, and is probably one of his most, really his most important supporters. And together, they were, in some ways, you could almost think of them as a team back in the early days. They traveled a lot. They supported each other a lot. And they worked together to kind of develop the network. Another really important church that was in Lee Vail's network was a church called, it was called Grace and Truth Tabernacle in Beaumont, Texas. And that was Jack Bell's church, John. Jack Bell's church. You probably heard of Jack Bell. And so those three churches really form the anchors of Lee Vail's sect of the message. Besides that, Ned Iverson remained more or less in agreement with Lee Vail for his entire life. And Ned Iverson, like I said, he took over the church in Florida after Lee Vail left. And Ned Iverson also planted several churches in North Carolina and South Carolina who ended up in that affiliation with Lee Vail sect of the message. So altogether, John, I mean, I would say based on what I know, there were probably around 1,200 people in Lee Vail sect of the message across all of those churches. You know, in the mid 70s and up into the 80s. So it was I would definitely call it a major sect of the message. They had an outsized influence just because of who Lee Vail was. They were never one of the large sects of the message, you know, with tens of thousands of people, but they were a pretty notable sect of the message. Besides that, they did end up doing some, because Lee Vail had traveled internationally somewhat, they had international contacts, and as they broke away, they did do some mission work, and they do have, there are churches, some few churches of Lee Vail's persuasion in Africa and in Central America. So they do have a small overseas presence as well. So kind of wrapping that up, let's talk about the Perugia, John. Let's actually talk about the thing that caused the schism today. And we're starting to run out of time, so we might just get to talk about it a little bit. But so the Perugia, what is that? I mean, that's a really, it's an interesting word, Perugia, right? So let me kind of describe this to our listeners. So most of the message, John, with the exclusion of Ewald Frank, every significant message preacher and every significant sect and part of the message believed that Jesus Christ returned in some vague way in 1963 when William Branham preached the Sermon on the Seals. Okay, you know, with the cloud and all of that that happened in 1963. So every sect of the message believed that. And as time went on, there kind of started to be a controversy, you know, how could Jesus in this vague way have came back spiritually in 1963? And now it's 1977, you know, and all of these years have went by. How's come nothing has happened? Like what, how do we explain all this away, right? Like there was an awareness in a lot of people that this thing has went on a whole lot longer than it should have, right? And now we're starting to question, did Jesus really come back in 1963? I mean, what's going on here? Because it's a weird thing, right? Because they thought Jesus was coming back in 63, that the rapture was basically in progress, and they were all going to leave back up with Jesus. So like Jesus, he made his trip down to pick up the bride in 63, and then in any minute he was going to take them, and they were all going to go back to heaven. Well, Lee Vail's sermons on the Perugia was his way, as the official explainer of the message, to try and rectify all of this and to put it into context for everybody. And what he did is questions of that rose up. Lee Vail actually went back to the original source material that William Branham copied his sermons out of when he preached it, John. Yeah. And William Branham, when he preached Revelation chapter 10, he copied that out of the works of Charles Taze Russell, the Jehovah's Witnesses. And William and Lee Vail knew it because he was there with Bankswood's wife and everything when they, you know, when they came up with it all collaboratively with William Branham. Lee Vail knew it came out of the Jehovah's Witness stuff. So he went back to Charles Taze Russell's books where the original stuff was on all this. And guess what Charles Taze Russell called all this in his book, John? He called it the Perugia. Okay. Yeah. And so he pulls it out and he basically gave Charles Taze Russell's explanation of the Perugia to try and help the people in the message make sense of what had happened. And the short of it is he basically breaks the second coming of Jesus into two phases. There's phase one, where Jesus returns spiritually, but not bodily. And that spiritual return, which precedes the bodily return, is called the parousia. So the spiritual return comes first, the parousia, in 1963, and then somewhere down the road, the bodily return will come, okay? And so that's what Lee Vail is doing with the parousia. He is showing people how to break Revelation chapter 10 and the second coming of Jesus into two phases, the parousia being the spiritual phase. And he's saying, since 1963, we have been in the parousia. We've been in the spiritual phase, waiting for the bodily return of Christ. And so that is essentially what parousia means. But here's the thing, John, that is not controversial in the message, is it?
No,
I mean, other than Ewald Frank's groups, everyone in the message believes this. And I would go so far as to say, not everyone believes it today, but you go back 20 years ago, 30 years ago, yeah, everybody believed this. And, you know, there's like some message apostates out there, John, who say, no, we never believe that, you know, because they're more recent converts in. I would say if you don't believe this, you might not believe the message, actually, because unless the Lord descended from heaven with a shout, there is no message, right? I mean, using the loaded language of the message there, people might not entirely grasp what I mean. But in message parlance, if the Lord did not descend from heaven with a shout in 1963, there is no message because the message is the shout. And so at any rate, that particular piece was not controversial. The piece that caused the controversy, John, that led to everyone coming after him, was what I'm going to describe next. And Lee Vail described it like this in his sermons. He said, after he preached this, the people in the message came after him with torches and pitchforks. Like, it was a terrible reaction when he added this next part. So Lee Vail basically claimed that in 1963, and it was 1977, roughly, when he really started to hone in on this, that in 1963, Jesus Christ, quote-unquote, left the mercy seat, and that upon leaving the mercy seat in 1963, the intercessory work of Christ had ended. Therefore, there was no more intercessory work of Jesus Christ. And and naturally, most of the people in the message community, with their understanding, this is going really deep into message theology, message thinking, but the sum of it is the people in the message more or less interpreted what Lee Vail was saying as no one else could be saved. Like, Lee Vail was closing the doors. No more children could be saved. No new converts could be saved. No one new could be saved and make it because Christ had left the mercy seat. That's how the overwhelming majority took what Lee Vail was saying. Now, I don't really think that's what Lee Vail meant. I think if you go back and you listen to his sermons on it, that's not entirely what he was saying. He was actually trying to switch over to the concept of, boy, we're going deep into message loaded language, John, here. The bleeding word, okay? He was transitioning from Christ's intercessory work being the means to salvation. He was transitioning from that to the bleeding word being the intercessory work for Christ and to be saved. And so, in message thinking, William Branham, when he delivered his special revelations, those revelations were the bleeding word, the quote-unquote bleeding word, in the same way that Jesus was the word made flesh. William Branham's revelations was the bleeding word. And so if you took the bleeding word, William Branham's revelations, you were covered by the blood, the bleeding word. And so you no longer needed the intercessory work of Christ on the cross because you have the bleeding word. Anyway, this is very deep into message thinking, and it can be very confusing, I think, to people who are not familiar with this ideology. But at the end of the day, the people in the message could not wrap their minds around the fact that Jesus Christ would leave the mercy seat and people could still be saved. They didn't want to fully go over to the bleeding word fully replaces the intercessory work of Christ. And so that is what then sets up the schism, John. Everyone is turning on Lee Vail, and it's not because he preached that Christ secretly came back in a spiritual way in 1963. It's because he preached that Christ left the mercy seat and the intercessory work of Christ ended in 1963. That is what caused the explosion.
And to the people who weren't in the message, who are studying the NAR and its history, who are listening, we just dropped an atomic bomb of heresy right at the end and and didn't give enough enough explanation of it to really understand it. So I think we're going to probably have to do another episode and just fully dive deeper into this. But so for both sides who are unfamiliar with this word parousia, it is a common theological term. It just simply means the second coming of Christ. Every Christian believes this. You're looking for the second coming of Christ. However, when you take the manifested sons of God, Joel's army theology, what developed strongly in IHOP KC and Morningstar, who's preaching Branhamism, all of these movements that are really basing off of this theology, what's interesting is there's, and it's more than I can really say in this 2-minute segment, but what's interesting is these are the same people that say William Branham went astray during his latter years. They're really referring to, when they say that, they're really referring to from 1963-ish to 1965, because they see the formation of this deity cult emerging. And they don't want to be associated with it. They know it's going destructive. So they say, we cut it off right here. But Lee Vail, as you mentioned, was working. He came in contact with William Branham around 1947, something like this. He started preaching Branhamism heavily in, what was it? It was the mid-50s, I think. And all of this is developing during the years that these NAR guys say that William Branham was not gone astray. So as these doctrines are progressing, they're talking about the good. They've divided William Branham into two, the good guy and the bad guy. Well, the good guy that they're saying is teaching everything that is in this heretical bombshell that we just dropped. So let's table it. Let's come back and let's dive a little bit deeper into the word parousia and Lee Vail and all of this. Are you okay with that, Charles?
That sounds great, because you're right. There's so much there to untangle. And besides that, I want to talk about what happened in Lee Vail's sect of the message after he broke away, too.
Yeah. So
I think we can easily go through another episode and try to unpack some of that language a bit more. But yeah, I think we've set a good table here. So this sect of the message is often referred to as the Parousia people. And Lee Vail launched this sect of the message in 1977 after all of the backlash to his, specifically, Christ coming off the mercy seat in 1963.
Awesome. Well, let's come back and let's do it. So if you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org and christiangospelchurch.org. For more about the history of William Branham and the healing revivals, you can read Come Out of Her, My People. And for more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR. Available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.